paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Karen Conti is our legal eagle with Conti and Dolan. You think it's important that the victims, their family members, their loved ones have access to that courtroom, right?
I do, and it's interesting because they had to actually go to court to get that authority to do that. And the reason is that when you are a witness in a trial, you can't sit through the trial until you've already testified. And the reason is you don't want that witness to be dovetailing or being affected by other people's testimony. So in Illinois, we have this victim's rights bill, and it says that if you are a witness but also a victim, that you can sit in the courtroom throughout the entire trial, even before your testimony, as long as the judge makes sure that it's not going to adversely affect the trial, which is what the court ruled. And so all of these victims, I think there's more than 40 of them, the survivors, family members, are going to be sitting in that courtroom throughout the trial and testifying as well.
Is there enough for everyone to be there? Enough room?
You know, I think there will be, and I think they will make room for them. There's certainly not going to be enough room for all of the press who are interested in this and all of the public who is going to be interested in this. Actually, I'm going over to the courthouse tomorrow for another matter, and, you know, I see that the courthouse is very, very secure, and there's all kinds of extra security measures. But, you know, these courthouses are just not equipped for things of this magnitude. So
right.
I'm sure there are people who would like to have seen this a trial from start to finish, but are not going to be able to do that.
In your career, you have represented both criminal defendants and crime victims. How does a crime victim or a family member prepare for what they're going to view in this courtroom?
You know, it's a significant decision to make. There are victims who say they would not miss it for the world. They want to look the defendant in the eye. They want to feel empowered that they're part of the solution to this horrific problem. But they are going to be exposed to the most horrific of crime scene pictures and autopsies. And it could be very traumatizing for these people. I don't know how it couldn't be to watch this in action and see it over and over again for a period of weeks. But again, they're entitled to do that. There are other victims, Lisa, who have opted to say, you know what, the system is going to work. It's going to put him in jail. I would rather have my efforts be directed toward, you know, gun laws or mental health issues. And so people have different ways of grieving. Different victims have different ways that they think might give them some, I hate the word closure, but at least some satisfaction. But I think you can't really tell people what to do. They have to experience it themselves and make their own decisions.
So jury selection has begun. How do they find an impartial jury?
I think it's going to be difficult, although, from what the internet says, they've already selected three, which kind of surprises me that they've done that so quickly. You know, with a community like this, you know, with there's memorials everywhere. If you have 48 people who were injured and 7 people dead, not to mention all the people who were at that parade who didn't get hurt, who thought they could have been hurt. This is such a large group of people that have been affected by this horrific crime. And so, you know, to find people, certainly you're not going to find someone who has not watched it on the news. You know, probably you're going to have nobody who's in that situation. But as long as that they can take those facts, listen to the evidence, and apply the law neutrally, they can be put on the jury. I think it's going to be hard to find someone who's going to be not emotional about this.
Right. Karen Conti is with us. We're talking about the jury selection for the trial of Robert Cremo III. So what kind of questions does the judge, and especially, you know, the other side, the people defending him, what do they ask? What do they ask of these jurors while they're selecting them?
Well, the judge just wants to make sure that the pretrial publicity has not adversely affected them. They, you know, also the same old questions about, can you spend 5 weeks here? And, you know, do you have anybody who, you know, was involved in this, and what was the involvement? So those are the basic questions to get people out for cause. But, you know, the prosecution wants law-abiding citizens, people who are tough on crime, who believe in the police officers, who are angry maybe that crime has been committed on them at some point in their lives. And people people who maybe are in favor of stronger gun laws, people who are outraged by this kind of crime. For defense jurors, I mean, I don't know how you pick a jury that is going to actually be favorable to this defendant. You know, you might find somebody who might be sympathetic to mental health issues or maybe be angry at his father for helping him purchase the gun. But again, how lenient can you be when you have 7 murders and 48 attempted murders? So you can be lenient, but you're still going to find him guilty.
Right. And you've got the surveillance video, the dropped weapon, and the fact that he really did confess, right?
Yes, that's what they're saying. You know, within 8 hours of the crime being committed, he supposedly confessed to the police. You know, it is very odd that this case is going to trial, because you would think that there would just be some sort of, hey, you know what, let's alleviate the problem of trying this case for all these victims. And if I were his lawyer, I'd say to him, listen, hey, why don't you just plead guilty? Maybe we can cut a deal for you to be in a nicer facility for the rest of your life, closer to your family, if that's what you want, and just be done with it. But my guess is that this guy is unstable. This guy wants to make a message. He wants to have some semblance of control, because he's probably never had control over anything in his life. And he wants to maybe get on the stand and say something to the world. Not that the judge is going to let him do it, but he's wired that way. And so, you know, I hope that doesn't happen, but be prepared for it.
And he knows he will not be facing the death penalty here in Illinois, so I fear that he's going to taunt those people who are there in honor of their loved ones that he murdered.
Yeah, watch it. He, you know, the people who commit these kinds of crimes are proud of what they did. They feel justified in having done it, and they have no sympathy for the victims at all. And in fact, you know, they feel like they're the victim. So this is very twisted. I feel really, really badly for these family members who are forced to go through this. And I hope to some extent it gives them some feeling of satisfaction, but I doubt that it really will.
For people who are not in law enforcement, we're not first responders, and we certainly don't practice law, how difficult is it for a good human being to represent this guy?
Well, representing somebody like this, you know, it's difficult, but this is what we do. We take on the hard cases. And I have to tell you, you know, everyone's entitled to the trial. You've heard that a million times. And you just put it on automatic pilot, you know, and you try to deal with it as best you can. And your expectations are not going to be exaggerated. You know, as a defense lawyer going in with the facts of this case, that you're in a bad situation, but you know you're going to do what you're going to do. And if justice gets done and he gets convicted, so be it. You've given him the best defense he can. And frankly, I'd like to see some of the facts come out in this trial. Maybe that's a good thing in this trial. What happened? How is it planned? What was the motivation? Not that we really care, because he's obviously twisted and sick, but, you know, what is it that we can glean from this trial so that we can maybe try for this not to happen again with another defendant? So, you know, I mean, you try to look at the good that could possibly come out of this trial.
And will there be an insanity plea?
There won't, because you have to lodge that early on. And my guess is that, first of all, it's hard to prove insanity, because you have to prove there's a mental defect that caused you not to understand that what you were doing was wrong. And the fact that he dressed up as a woman and fled the scene and tried to get away, obviously he knew what he did was wrong. So that was going nowhere. But my guess is he didn't want to lodge that defense, because that sort of assumes that you're guilty of the actual crime. That would have been the best defense that I could have come up with, but apparently my guess is that he did not want to lodge that defense.
Thank you so much for joining us, Karen.
Sure, Lisa. Take care.
She's such a good voice for that whole space in our world that many of us don't understand, because thank God many of us haven't been in a courtroom and had to deal with this, but we'll follow that trial very closely.